listening to the Wharton Alumni Executive Education Podcast.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Wharton Alumni Executive Education Podcast. I am your host, Alex Gromatsky, and today I'm going to be talking to Ashish Saxena, who is president at Innova Solutions, and he has had an extensive history of working with successful companies, seeing companies go from hundreds of millions of dollars to tens of billions of dollars. So we're going to be diving into his history and what he's been seeing when it comes to companies being successful on the technology side. We're going to be diving into various topics on that front. So looking forward to having you, and thank you for being on today.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Of course. So it'd be great if you started with just a little bit of background about yourself and your path to where you are today, because you've worked at many different companies and moved around a little bit and have a broad range of experience. So do you want to dive into some of that?
Absolutely, Alex. So let me start from where, you know, I was born. I was born in a small place in India to where I am today with you in podcast. It feels a very long journey, but, you know, very exciting journey. And I have many defining moments, what has brought me to today, where I am today as a leader. If you look at it, you know, I started my journey as a doing engineering from the HPTI Kanpur, one of the premier institute in India. After that, I worked in a manufacturing operation plan and with a company called Hindalco Industries, which is owned by a large Birla group. What I learned there was amazing. You know, given my first job, I learned about the crisis management. As you work in a shop floor and you being called in the night to manage the operation and every minute counts there. What I learned there was two things. One, how do you manage the crisis? And second, how do you stay calm while you are in the crisis? So that was my first job, which I did for a couple of years. Then I moved to, you know, in India again for a very unique organization, which is a Government of India organization called National Power Training Institute, where I worked on some of the cool technology, like what has become very prevalent right now, mathematical modeling and simulation, and which is digital twin today, or I had got a little bit of early flavor of artificial intelligence and some of the things which I was very privileged to see or get experienced in the part of my career. Then I had another pivotal moment and I joined TCS, Tata Consultancy Services, a premier IT organization today. It's a fantastic journey of 20 years with TCS. TCS was a very small organization when I've joined, you know, close to 10,000 people. And then today it's a $25 billion company. But when I left, they were around $18, $19 billion company. 20 years can be characterized into a 10 assignments of 2 years. It's a long journey to talk about. But what my takeaway was, three things there. One, seeing the scale of the company, moving the company from $100 million to $19 billion. And that's the scale I saw. And I've grown with it. So I can see how the scale can happen, how you, you know, manage some of the Y2K aspect of it, you know, financial meltdown in 2007, you know, dot-com burst. So a lot has happened in those 20 years. But what has kept the company going in terms of the one, ability to scale, pivot at the right moment, and people-centric approach, because, you know, leaders were given the opportunity to manage the business. So fantastic journey in TCS for 20 years, but ability to scale, manage the crisis, pivot to the right moment, drive the strategic leadership, and focus on the people. That was my learning in those years. Then I moved to Wipro. Again, I've seen a good growth from there, managing a couple of $100 million business to growing to a both organically and organically to a $1 billion business in 5 years. And don't forget, there was one pandemic to manage in between because I joined Wipro in 2017 and left in 2023. So in those 5 years, again, to think after joining a company with a company for 20 years, so there were a lot more change management, a lot of learning how to lead the business, how to grow the business. And but again, my people-centric approach, believing on the team and building a right team and also building a right strategy to grow. And don't lose hope when you have a pandemic to manage. It was a fantastic journey from there on. then today I'm at Vinnova Solution. Vinnova is going through a fantastic journey of transformation. Company has grown from $0 to $3 billion in last 25 years through a founder, Raj Sardana, who is also Wharton alum. We are pivoting towards the Vinnova 2.0. And as a president, I'm chartered to drive the business unit strategy, help into the corporate strategy, transform the future of the organization. So that's on the career, you know, many pivotal moments, and I'll have you double click. But I also want to talk about my educational journey, because as a lifelong learner, I did my engineering from HPTI Kanpur. Then after 25 years, I went to the MBA for Rutgers Business School, where, you know, it was again very difficult to go back to school after 25 years. And then, you know, very privileged to attend the Wharton and become the alum of the Wharton. And so that kept me, you know, in terms of, I believe that learning is lifelong learning, and you have to continue to learn every day, whether it's on the job, whether from the people or from the your formal educations like Wharton and Rutgers and what I had early part of it. On the personal side, of course, you know, I live here in Michigan with my family and my son. My son is, you know, already started into the investment banking. And so he's, you know, on his way to learn about finance and business. And I live here with my wife in Michigan. I've moved around. So Michigan is not the only place. I've pretty much changed close to 8 to 10 places in last, you know, 10 years, you know, from my birth to today. Probably I'm living in 15 or 20 cities, including the US and India and other places. So yeah, all around experience. And hopefully you got some perspective, Alex.
Thank you for sharing that. One thing that really stuck out to me amongst the many things that actually you brought up was seeing companies grow from 100 million to 19 billion, what was that like? And what was some of the things that you took away that made that successful? Because that's quite the feat.
Yeah, so many things, right? One, the right strategy, believing in people, pivoting at the right moment to drive the growth, and building the capability, because we are in a consulting world, or I was in a consulting world when I worked with TCS. So pivoting at the right moment, seize the opportunity when the market presents to us, and believing in the people and building the leadership pipeline and the talent, which helps you to grow. So it was first principle, it was simple, but of course, a lot of hard work by the many people who has brought the company or saw the growth from what I spoke about.
You brought up people. What are some traits or characteristics that you think are important in people for companies to be successful?
See, leadership as a leader, what I believe is, in first of all, it is, should be authentic leadership. And I'm talking about my perspective of the leadership, how I portray a ideal leader, so to speak. One, you have to be authentic. You should be able to bring your authenticity. I also talk about bringing your whole self into it, you know. Because that's important. Work is the very large percentage of our work life and overall life. So you're bringing your whole self into the organization. It is very important. A couple of other values, I look at it in terms of the trust, you know, having a trust on the team, having a trust on the ecosystem, having a trust on the customer. I talk about teamwork. This sounds simple, but it's very important, because most of the challenges when I find in a leadership role is the lack of trust or lack of teamwork. So trust and teamwork is important. Third thing is belief. And I'm a big fan of Ted Lasso, and I borrowed that word from the belief I used to use before, but then I borrowed it from Ted Lasso. Believing in yourself, believing in your team is critical. Candor, I think, which links to the authentic leadership in terms of how you drive that. Courage, I think your ability to take risk at right point of time, whether your own career or whether you're for the company and decision you make is important. And last but not the least is the growth mindset, you know, which is talked about from Carol Dweck's book, Mindset. But it is really important that you keep that growth mindset for yourself and the company. So those are some of my, you know, beliefs and values. And I saw, you know, in various part of my roles, which I played.
Is there any way to gauge some of those characteristics in people quickly, or does it take time to evaluate a person, especially when it comes to things like trust and growth mindset? How do you determine that you have the right people on the company for a company to grow in the way it has, because you've been in a lot of companies, you've seen some of them grow, you've come across a lot of people. So it'd be great to have some of your insights as to what's required and how you gauge that.
So Alex, these are difficult. Soft things are difficult to gauge, and I wouldn't say that it is easy. But the way I look at it, you know, especially in trust, and I've given this example to many who have spoken, there are two types of the trust you start with, right? Some people start with 0% trust and you build on it because you see that examples of the trust. I'm the leader who start with 100% trust, and which may sound a little bit ironical, but I start with 100% trust as a leader, and you give full faith to whether your company or whether to your team or whether to your customer. And then you use the time to either gain or deplete. So that's my way to look at it, because that puts me at ease that, you know, you start with 100% trust, and then how you experience the journey, your trust comes down or goes. So that's my way of measuring, trust. Growth mindset is, you know, there I try a little bit more of experiential learning. I will give people some of the assignments which are a little bit out of their comfort zone. And they will very quickly, they will either react, you know, one way or other, and that will tell me, you know, whether a person is willing to take up the responsibility. So trust is more soft. Start with 100% trust and manage through the journey. Growth mindset is more experiential and give some assignments, you know, work with them, talk to them. You will be able to gauge both of these aspects.
Those were really great answers, because I don't think I would have had a better answer or a different way to articulate that. So thank you for sharing that. And what are you currently doing and focusing on with Innova Solutions? Because it also looks like it's a big company. How are you leading that company through the next stages? And what are you currently focused on over there?
So if you look at it, I talked about Innova's journey. We have grown from 0 to 3 billion in 25 years. We have ambition to grow even better. But there are a couple of things we are doing. One, we are pivoting through the verticalization journey, and we are more industry focused now. So that's one of the role we are playing, how we get closer to the customer, understand the industry domain. I lead 5 verticals like retail and CPG, energy, manufacturing, travel and transportation, and technology business. So one strategy we are driving is the verticalization strategy. How our people understand more, how we create a solution which is industry focused. Number two is bring the team together. So collaboration, because we have many functions like horizontal solutions, the vertical aspect of it, and many other sub-functions within those functions. So collaboration is important. We have grown as acquisitions, so integration and cultural transformation is a very important element because we have seen a huge growth through the acquisition in the last 4 or 5 years. So verticalization journey, collaboration within the function, bringing the cultural aspect of it. And third is the lead with the bolder ambition, because the market is tough today. As you can see, 2023 has been a bit of a rough year, but have the hope for the future, have the hope for the, you know, ambition, or rather have a bolder ambition for the future is important. And last but not the least is drive through the first principles, you know, human-centric leadership aspect, which I spoke about, those value-driven. I've seen those values are consistent across the company, you know, because everybody values the people-centric leadership. Everybody values the human-centric leadership. So those are the few things I'm, you know, driving for the future. And I'm very excited to see where we are heading in 2024.
Growth through acquisition has been very hard for some companies, and growing that way, especially if you're integrating new people, can be very difficult. What are some of the most difficult things that you've come across, whether it's growing through acquisition and onboarding new team members or integrating certain components into your own company? What are some of the challenges that you've had to overcome and had to deal with when either acquiring companies or growing the company?
Yeah, if you look at it overall, I have seen multiple experiences across the companies. Most important challenge into the when you acquire a company is about culture, because the culture of two companies are very different. So you have to look at the cultural aspect of it. Second is a value proposition, because when you acquire a company, either you acquired a company for the capability or you acquired the company for the scale. So you have to look at it whether this company is complementing your existing proposition or whether it is adding and bringing a new proposition. So defining that value proposition is extremely important. Third thing is what I've seen it in the here and as well as the previous organization, having a structured program office approach to look at it, financial integration, HR integration, cultural integration, and the team integration is important. Last but not the least is that understanding that you have acquired the company for a reason and respect the people and their capability, because they are bringing a capability to you, and the market approach or appreciation or experience, I think that's critical too. So there are some soft element which every M&A, you know, has to go through, and there are some hard element in terms of financial performance and, you know, return on investment, etc. So that's where I have seen experience. Any M&A is hard. Any integration is hard because it's about people to people integration. So you have to keep and be patient because some of the integration may take longer than what you would have anticipated.
I've spent some time on asset acquisitions and very little on corporate acquisitions. And asset acquisitions don't have a lot of the cultural and human elements to it the way in a corporate acquisition does. You touched on two points as to, you know, reasons why to make an acquisition. One was to add on or supplement or complement the current capabilities. And the other was to, I guess, enhance or to expand into new verticals. How do you decide what to do? And are you always looking for companies to acquire? And which ones end up being a right fit?
So we continue to look for that. Now, of course, capability in terms of acquiring for only two reasons, as I said, you touched upon very nicely about asset acquisition and the corporate acquisition, because they are two different intent. And I'm here talking about mostly corporate acquisition. One, you have to continue to scan. And as we look at it, you're familiar with the 3+3-year strategy or the annual operating plan or a strategic operating plan. And I continue to look at it, what are the white spaces are in your industry or in your vertical or your solution. Then you look at it, where the white spaces are, either you go build versus buy, because, you know, there's a potential two option, you build or you buy. Then you have to look at it is, you know, ROI method. You know, if you have to take a very long time to build, then naturally you should look for a buy. But then you have to look at it, if you're buying, what is the price you are willing to pay, and something called worth of the company, or, you know, in a corporate world, we talk about the, you know, valuation of the company. So that's the approach I take. But you have to take in corporate acquisition, mostly it is strategic, because you are trying to build a capability for a long run. You are not buying an asset for purpose of, revenue acceleration. You look at capability, at least in my view, that's the way we think it. And then look at the market. Sometimes you may not find it, because something if you have a white space, that means it is not available in abundance. Otherwise, we would have built it too. So, but there are, you know, companies are there. There are tech-ins are there. I had one of the experiences in the past where we were looking for a capability and we found a match, and it was for a practice to be built. So we went and looked at from the market and capability standpoint, Alex.
What I really appreciate about the way you're articulating things is you're simplifying things in such a way that's actually quite incredible. You're talking about build versus buy from the corporate standpoint. You're talking about versus supplementary versus complementary. And you're really breaking things down very simply and just scanning over them as if everybody thinks this way. How many acquisitions have you been involved in for you to just fly over some of these principles that are actually quite nuanced but very deep when you touch on them and don't expand on them?
I have been involved into the couple of them. I have not into like many, but wherever I got involved, I have been deeply involved. But one of the things, this is a very important subject for me as a strategic leader. So I keep studying about the aspect of it. Of course, some of the things I've learned through our Wharton days in terms of M&A and best practices of M&A. So I would say, yeah, whatever I've learned in the world of Wharton and other business schools, I have tried to apply in some of the businesses. But I do look at it. While I may not have done many acquisitions, but I do look at it white space every year or every strategic operating plan or annual operating plan. I have looked at industry-wide availability of some of the target where we can potentially look at white spaces. So I've been very thoughtful about the process. Now, you don't do M&A every day until unless you find it very strategic.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And even the way you touch on white space and accelerating revenue, and white space in itself to some degree are creative because they're white for a reason. People haven't necessarily touched on them or haven't gone into those spaces. So there's also the creative component, or we'll call it the risk side of things that you touched on a little bit earlier, that is required for when you're going into one of those white spaces. How do you balance risk and decide, you know, what's worth the risk? Is it a payoff method? Is it how big the market can be? How do you value risk, or how do you decide what kind of risk tolerance you have?
I think the way we will have to look at the risk is, first of all, whether this risk is worth, you know, taking it, right? Is any, you know, human risk analysis, you have to look at risk versus reward. Now, of course, you can't be very cautious. And as I said in the beginning, having a bolder decision, having willingness to taking a risk is the leadership's trait. We all have to build on it. But you don't have to take unnecessary risks. So the way I look at it, very structured process of risk management, right? You go through the, let's say, anything, whether you are acquiring a customer or whether you're acquiring a business or whether you are getting into a new market or geographical expansion, you do look at it risk. Now, there's a risk management philosophy apply that, okay, if there is a risk, what is a reward? So you look at the ROI method. You look at it, a very clear valuation. If I go into the financial modeling, you look at valuation, you look at the revenue planning, you look at the synergy. This is the word to be very effectively used into the M&A world, is about synergies, right? Are you able to generate the synergy? And as long as your synergy is higher than your risk, or which is a valuation you are paying, there are two types of risk, right? One is a financial risk and second is the reputational risk. Now, financial risk can be covered through the valuation, and the reputational risk you have to judge through the, you know, what you want to do as a market. And some of the reputational risk can come from a strategy too, because you are willing to take a risk on a strategy. So that's my thinking. I'm not expert in M&A, but the way I look at it simplistically through these two lenses, you know, valuation risk, which is financial, and strategic risk through reputational or any kind of a strategic risk.
Well, you've touched on a lot of metrics and variables when it comes to the M&A side of things. So I appreciate that, because those sound very thought out. What are some of the things that you're currently doing and working on that you're excited about, whether it's white spaces or things that you're planning in 3 or 5 or 10 years down the road? What's exciting you, and where do you see the company going, or yourself going for that matter?
Yeah, overall, you know, very excited, as you can look at it. Something which I can talk about openly is the technology is all pervasive. If you look at from industry view, the industry which I am in, which is technology, is very, very, you know, expanding. If you talk about whether it's a software-defined vehicle or whether it's the software in the chips, and you talk about in terms of semiconductor industry or automotive industry, technology is going to play very, you know. Look at the Tesla. It is probably one of the biggest walking computer, which, or running computer, which we see in a planet in some sense. So, it's excitement for the future. There's technology is going to be there. Second, this generative AI, you know, there is a huge future aspect of it. Now, generative AI is today bringing a mixed of reaction. Is one, whether it's going to take away an impact on the, some of the traditional jobs, but it will also have a hope for the future, whether it's a healthcare industry or finance industry or manufacturing. So that excites me from a market dynamics. If you look at it, technology is going to remain very, very long time. And I'm in the industry which is providing services of technology. So that's excitement from the market. Second, you know, global aspect of it. We are wanting to be part of the global, and we are continue to look at the global expansion as one of the our approach. So market is giving me hope. Second is expansion on the global aspect of it. So as a leader, I continue to look at it. Growth is definitely our number one priority. Second is the continue to improve our brand. I spoke about verticalization journey, which we are on, embarked on Innova in last couple of years. And as a leader, I want to continue to grow the leader, impact the, you know, success of a team, shape the strategy of the corporation and the business unit, which I'm part of it. So that's what I continue to do. You know, of course, you have to keep the long-term horizon in the mind, but you have to keep the short-term actions in the fray too, so that you bring this whole balance of long-term versus short-term, Alex.
Thank you for touching on that. And one thing you spoke about was technology. And as an IT company, technology has become so broad. You talked about Tesla and walking robots and chips from NVIDIA and AI. And technology has become such a broad field. How do you manage to keep up with technology, given that it has become so broad? And then not just that, how do you market yourself to clients when there's so many niche categories that people can get into, whether it's app development or software or, you know, building websites? Like IT used to back in the day for companies be, help me set up the printer and the internet. Right now, it's kind of grown to a whole beast in itself. So how do you see technology from an expansive basis, how big it's become, to helping your clients understand what you're doing, how you can help, and then also have that skill set?
No, no, absolutely. And I can totally relate from where I started my career today, where technology is, it has grown exponentially will be an understatement. So yes, that's a challenge. We all have to look at it, where to focus and what to focus. We continue to look for the leading edge trend. So the way I look at it, three horizon strategy, right? The horizon one, where you are doing the current services, you are looking for some of the technology like cloud migration, cybersecurity, data and analytics, application engineering. Some of them are very horizon one. Today, they are all there. You have to differentiate based on the your agility and your speed and your talented speed and talented skill. So that's horizon one. Horizon two is, which is adjacency. So if I have done something, let's say software work, can I apply into the automotive industry in the software defined vehicle, or I can look at it in a bigger way or scale in an adjacent. Now, third is horizon three, which is you have to keep up yourself for the future, but that may not bring in an immediate growth because horizon three is all about future. So that's my mental framework. That's my framework which I use in a strategic discussion with my team. Keep these three horizon in mind. That also allows you to do a proper capital allocation because you have to keep something for horizon three as a capital while you continue to invest a lot more on horizon one and horizon two because you have to generate enough cash to invest for the future in the horizon three. So that's the way I look at it, Alex. It's not easy, to be honest. Technology is moving with such a rapid speed that catching up sometime is difficult. But I have personally seen it. If you keep this framework of Horizon 1, Horizon 2, and Horizon 3 in mind, it makes things simpler and you can categorize each one of them. Because every technology can be, which is known today, can be categorized under these three horizons.
Yeah, and cybersecurity has been a problem for a long time since viruses have existed on computers, which was essentially the beginning. So cybersecurity still remains, to be in Horizon 1. Then what you didn't touch on is quantum computing. Where would you see that? Would you see that as horizon three? And then also, what do you think about blockchain? Is that also then horizon one? And how do you see, you know, blockchain and quantum computing either competing or not competing with each other?
I would say quantum computing per se is still a horizon three because I've not yet seen a lot of business use cases. The way I look at it, the technology is still into research and they're still coming to the industry and they're not wider use cases. Now, I'm not expert in quantum computing, but I would say still a horizon three. Blockchain probably is turning between horizon two and horizon three because it's still not. And the way I compare is that something which is immovable, cloud migration, data analytic, cybersecurity, and I'll come to cybersecurity in a minute because it can actually go between horizon one and horizon two. So that's the way I'll do it. Now, coming back to cybersecurity, there are multiple facets of cybersecurity, right? There's infrastructure security, there's the application security, which I will put under the, in the horizon one. But a lot of people now beginning to talk about operational security. You might have heard about this OT, right? Operational security in the OT environment, which is a manufacturing environment or 5G coming into the manufacturing. I would call that as a horizon two because not everybody has figured it out in terms of the OT security element of it. So sometimes one technology can span into two horizon two because the horizon itself is a big and their expansion and adjacencies could be there. Now, it's very unlikely that one of our technology is sitting in horizon one and horizon three because that is a very difficult, that means we have not categorized it correctly. But there's a lot more in you see people in Horizon 1, Horizon 2, and some might sit in Horizon 2, Horizon 3. So there's not a hard line. This just makes me think in a manner of speaking, but there are some continuum too, Alex.
And you've talked about technology having grown exponentially. With AI and generative AI, do you think that speed is just going to increase even faster now? And if so, how do you find the people that solve solutions quicker and quicker? Because we had ChatGPT, then we have all these apps coming out, then you have all the big companies getting into it, launching essentially their version of ChatGPT, which seems overnight, but yet it seems like it took years to get there. And the evolution is happening so quickly, and people that are integrating into that side of things. What's next after this, and how do you keep up with technology? Because it seems to just be changing so quickly.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. Every day, last year in Davos Forum, people were talking about the generative AI. Today it is becoming, mainstream. I still feel generative AI is, still a little bit of early in the curve because of the nature of the use cases and potential. But it's exciting. And a lot of people talked about generative AI could be the next internet. Like when you remember the internet got, invented, the world has changed for forever. Generative AI is almost like that. And I do believe, and I'm very optimistic for the future of the generative AI use cases, whether it's in a healthcare industry. People are still scratching the surface. If you look at it, most of the generative AI use cases, what I've heard of, is on the operating efficiency, whether it's HR or finance or some of those process horizontal functions. People are yet to see a big use case coming up in terms of the impacting the large healthcare industry or predictive analytics or predictiveness of that, illness or something like that. I'm very optimistic if one day we would probably see that. In manufacturing, I'm beginning to see some discussion around modeling and simulation and how we can reduce the defect while designing and simulation itself rather than the manufacturing. So the lot is hope, but like any technology hype cycle, we have to wait for some time to settle in. There are early adopters like you would see it, but there are people who are waiting for that. But we are in an exciting time. I would say we are in an exciting time to see how generative AI, AI, ML, computing comes along with it. So, but some people are looking at it this as a, wait and watch and see where they do, because this also requires investment.
No, it absolutely does. And I did coding very early on, and then I stopped doing it because it just got so complicated. And I was like, you know what? I think AI is going to get to a place, and platforms will get to a place where it's going to be no code. And now you're seeing no code stuff all over the place. And with AI, you're able to do this. So I was one of those wait and watch until the time that I can start using it for the things I want to use it to. So I think we're getting to that place where if you can figure out the tools that you need, things are going to become a little bit easier for some people, and just have to figure out what the applications that you want to apply them to. So very interesting what you're doing, what you're seeing, and some of the projects that you're working on. Are you able to share some of the projects that you work on for clients and some of the more interesting, exciting ones?
Of course, some of them we can share, but I can't share the name of the customer, but I can broadly see that definitely we are seeing an advent of Industry 4.0 in the manufacturing industry. We are working with some of the customers. We are helping them in terms of improving their efficiency and effectiveness using IoT as a platform. So there are many customers beginning to deploy the IoT technology into their manufacturing or into their sensor aspect. So that's one big trend we are seeing, and we do see working with a lot of customers. Another area, emerging area, we are beginning to see through some of the industry I work on is the sustainability, whole ESG aspect of it, but more on the environment and sustainability. I spoke about scope 1, scope 2, scope 3 reporting. So while people are yet figuring it out how to do those reportings right, a lot of projects are becoming important for the data analytics perspective, having the base data. So we do see a many IoT type of the project. We see many data analytics projects. I also work into the engineering. One of the team reports me, which is engineering aspect of it. So we see some project into material science. We see some project in terms of the automotive transformation, whether it's a connected car transformation or whether it is, software-defined vehicle. So we do see some of the, work done to automotive manufacturers in the area of connected car platform, because everybody's investing into the software in the car.
So it can be very sophisticated, such as self-driving vehicles, but it can also, from the IoT perspective, be something as simple as putting it into a fridge and checking how many times your door opens and closes from an ESG perspective to see how much cold air is emitted or how much energy is wasted. So it can really be both sides of it, if I'm understanding that correctly.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of things are there. Then the connected fridge is there. There's everything, what I call is every two thing I call is nowadays everything connected. So it could be connected fridge, it could be connected car, it could be connected home. Like, for example, I'll give you an example. I have, of course, let's say I've traveled abroad or I travel outside, I could still manage the temperature in my home through a thermostat. And if I see there's snow happening in Michigan, I manage the temperature purely from one, managing the temperature in the house, second, from the ESG standpoint. Otherwise, I have to fix the temperature at some point of time, and either I'm overutilizing the energy or I'm underutilizing, depending. So that's a real use case coming back to the connected X. Second, of course, I have spoken many things about it in the past, is chip to thing. So we do see this trend coming in. Chips are everywhere, whether it's automotive or the car or, PC or, our own fridge, or everything has something or chip there, right? So that chip also will allow you to use many connected things. So yeah, connected X, connected everything is a big trend, and IoT is one of the element of that connected thing.
So it's really about optimization then on that standpoint and how to improve productivity.
One is the productivity. So there are multiple angles there, right, Alex? One is the basic level at efficiency and effectiveness. So how are you more efficient, whether it's a equipment or whether it's a process or whether it's a plant or whether it's a machine. Second is effectiveness, right, in terms of how you are able to drive some of things effectively. Third element is on the other side, you're using technology to make things happen, like hold this Tesla aspect of over-the-drop software feature, which is becoming very famous. So that also allows you to automate things, and so, but that's not about efficiency or effectiveness, that's about the user experience. Because now, when you drive, and Tesla is the only, but I'm sure many other automotive companies and everybody started putting the software in the car, and you can do many features. So it's also about end user experience. So on one spectrum, it is efficiency. On other spectrum, it is about end user experience.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for sharing that and touching on that. So we covered some of the business side of things. You got into some of the deep dives from M&A. Appreciating that we went over some of your history. Are there some other topics that you want to share with our Wharton group or the community in general, our listeners, that we haven't touched on yet?
I think one of the things I talk about in most of the discussion which I have is all about leadership, because finally all we do the hard stuff, or whether we do high performance, and we are all high performing leader, we focus on the fiscal performance or ESG performance, or those are the hard metrics, but what I always talk about that having a balance as a leader on hard versus soft, because finally your result will come through the soft element, which I spoke about at the beginning, of your trust and teamwork and belief. And so spending time, I think, as a leader, balancing that aspect of it, that as a leader, we are human. Second thing I talk about is the human-to-human connections. Employees are human. Customers are human too. So if you treat customers as a human, what you're trying to create for them, whether you are servicing them or creating a product, that humanness is important. And the last but not the least is having fun part of it, because we all want to make sure that while we are a hard-charged leader, we should do the right thing for ourselves. And care for yourself. After pandemic or even before, I'm beginning to talk about self-care, importance of sleep and importance of, especially for Wharton leaders and everywhere leaders who are very, supercharged and want to be always fast. I think slow down to go far will be my another message by doing self-care. And when you say self-care, means your own care and your team's care and your family. So just want to leave out that topic because it's very close to my heart and also important for us as a human being and being effective as a leader.
Thank you for sharing that. and you touched on being authentic as well. So outside of being authentic, what's one way to develop those soft leadership skills that you've seen worked well when you were trying to develop it in somebody else, or when you're trying to impart that wisdom, or when you're trying to get a team member to improve those soft leadership skills? What is something, either a book or a course or a program or a training that you would recommend to them to do?
So I would say definitely the lifelong learning attitude is important. Definitely what an advanced management program or Rutgers Business School, my MBA, has helped me in that. There are several books, I've been reading about it, but definitely a couple of books which has been recently I've been reading. One of my all-time favorite is Springboard by Professor Richard Schell, because that's the book has touched me deeply when I was in Wharton, which brings a very unique question about what is success and what is happiness. So that's my all-time favorite. And I've been, recommending everybody who I, come across. Second thing is a recent book by, Adam Grant, Think Again. I think we all have come a long way and we think in a particular way, but rethinking and ability to think again, I think itself is important. So these are the couple of books. One is a little bit softer. Second, in terms of thinking, is critical. And another book, which is not a Wharton book, but which for a leader I liked very much, is this Six Mindset of a CEO. It is written by the McKinsey Partners. Talks about the six minds of the CEO. I think that has been helping me a lot. It is for every leader in terms of what those mindsets should be. How you build those mindsets. So these are three books comes to mind, and naturally, water program or anything. And spending time and a little bit of effort and money on self-learning and personal learning. I'm the one of the leader who says learning never stops. Some may believe that we have arrived and we have reached to a point of pinnacle and we learned everything. I believe in that life gives you every day some new learning, and you should invest time to learn every day. Because there's no end to learning. And the day you stop learning, probably you cease to, exist as a, professional to, become to the next level.
Yeah, there's infinite things to know about, and there's infinite things that we don't yet know about. And there's so many different topics to get into. I know personally, I've gotten to so many topics that I knew nothing about personally, whether it was from, religion to getting into finance to marketing to certain technologies to coding to even personal skills such as, let's say, archery or surfing, things like that. There's just so many things to learn about in this day and age, and the world's such a beautiful place. So I think this is a great spot to leave it at, especially because I don't understand why people are trying to get to the moon, since I think nobody's explored all corners of the earth. So I'm like, why don't you start there? You're trying to leave the earth. But I get the whole progress side of things, and people have big ambitions, but for me, there's so much to discover on this earth still. So until I've explored every corner here and talked to every person on this world, I have a lot still to do over here.
No, I totally agree with that. I've not even explored enough in Michigan, so forget about exploring in Earth. So yeah, world itself is big. And philosophically speaking, we have not even explored ourselves. Human mind has infinite. I can't put in a say that we have all understood how our mind works, and there's so much of research is happening into neuroscience and philosophy and all of that. So if we can't figure it out enough in our mind, that itself says that there's so much to figure it out or so much to research before we say, oh, we have learned everything.
That's a very good point. You're right. I keep learning more about myself every day or every week. So, and I learn more about my wife too. And you think that would eventually stop, but I'm always learning something about her.
No, absolutely. I think learning about people is not easy. And that's the most complex science I've ever come across.
Well, I appreciate your time today, and thank you for being on. It was great having you.
Thank you, Alex, and I appreciate, I hope this is helpful for our Wharton team and even broader audience, whoever get opportunity to listen in.